This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening to you for Wednesday, July 17th, 2013. My name is Dr. Doug Kelly, and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Doug. How are you doing tonight? How is everybody?
Everybody's
fine. I want to know everybody's fine. We're going to have a good show tonight, actually. Got a little lineup of news features, and going to have a little discussion later that is debating throughout. Well, you know, it's one of those controversial topics.
Yeah, on euthanasia, and
yeah,
we will talk about that in a little while. So we've got that on the agenda. If you have any comments, you're certainly welcome to make them in the chat room. Or if you want to call in, you can. We don't have a call screener tonight, so we will take you on. If I see somebody on the switchboard, I'll ask if you're just listening or if you have a comment. Anyway, we'll get into the introductory comments. Metaphysical Universe is a weekly service and educational program of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this weekly radio program, MCHS Church also operates the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, a metaphysics school. I'm being told I sound like a tunnel.
Yeah, we got a little echo, Doug. It's on the microphone, I think.
I'll turn it down a little bit, but make sure that you're, it would only be you or me, so I will turn it down a little bit, but it's pretty much the same settings I do every week. Anyway, as I was saying, we operate a metaphysics school offering bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in metaphysics with a number of specializations available. If you'd like more information, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. I'm being told not you, Doug, just your voice. Okay. Well,
I think she's just playing with you.
No, I know what it is. Yeah. It didn't switch over to my main mic, folks. So sorry. Do that right now, so you should be here.
Hey,
much better.
Much better. Improved. Thanks.
Okay. So, anyway, I wanted, before I read the profession of beliefs, I wanted to mention that we've modified principle belief number 2. We've just added to it a little bit, the last part, and you'll hear that in just a moment, a short last sentence. So I'll talk about that once I read them all. The spiritual philosophy of MCHS Church is based upon 9 principles of belief. These principles of belief are, number 1, as sentient and evolving human beings, we not only believe in practicing and living by the principle do no harm, but also in the principle of do right, thus enhancing the vibrational level of humanity. Number 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit to ultimately triumph in the face of any dilemma. The answers we seek already exist within us. We invoke and exert the counselor and guru within. Number 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems, and believe the roots of those solutions lie in exploring, understanding, and empowering the human condition. Number 4, we embrace the differences that make all human beings unique, recognizing that we all come from star material and are therefore equal, irrespective of heritage, beliefs, gender, or gender preference. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. Number 5, rather than a supreme being, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Number 6, we believe the nature of a human being encompasses both a physical and spiritual aspect, and that human consciousness survives the death of the physical body in a coherent fashion. Thus, death opens a new chapter of life and conducts the individual into a higher state of existence. Number 7, we believe in self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will, and that these 3 synergistically create the goal of self-completeness. Number 8, we believe in the value of practical education in metaphysics, metapsychology, and life skills as a means of empowering the human spirit and enhancing the human condition. We maintain an open but grounded mind to potential realities as yet undescribed by science. Number 9, we believe that discovering the true nature of consciousness and human existentialism will ultimately have a positive impact on human evolution and peaceful coexistence. For more information on these principles of belief as well as MCHS, visit mchschurch.org. Now, I want to comment just briefly on principle of belief number 2. It states, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit to ultimately triumph in the face of any dilemma. The answers we seek already exist within us. And we have added a short sentence to this one. We invoke and exert the counselor and guru within. This is something that I felt was necessary to add to these, because one of the big teachings of MCHS is to be your own counselor, to be your own spiritual guru. That's one of the reasons why MCH will never be a cult, because we give our members and those who follow us all the tools they need to be complete within themselves. That's the whole point of it, to be complete within yourselves, to not, quote, need, unquote, somebody or someone else, something else, to complete you. You're complete within yourself. You're perfect just the way you are. And so when I write, we invoke, that means to call upon, and exert means to put to work, the counselor and the guru within, your higher self. Now, does this mean you can't ask for advice? No, of course not. You can ask for advice. You know, sometimes we need a little advice. We might want to confide in a confidant, get some different perspectives, but in the end, we need to be our own counselor. We don't want to blindly follow any other person, and that means me too. In other words, think for yourself. You know, question everything. And that's why we go to such great lengths in our curriculum at the school and at MCHS to, when we write something, we can defend it to a reasonable degree. It's got some substance. It's got a ground to put its feet on, so to speak. And so that's why it's, you know, when I'm questioned, when anybody questions me, I don't agree with this, you know, that's fine. I don't care whether people agree with it. But if somebody says you're wrong, they better do their homework first, because I have. Now, that doesn't mean I'm always right. Don't tell anybody that. That's the whole world fool there. But you can pretty much count on the fact that I can back it up. So why is this? Because I think for myself. And I honestly, you know, what others think of me is none of my business. You can have an opinion, you can disagree, that's perfectly fine. It's not going to change what I'm doing. It's not going to change my mission. It's not going to change my vision. And if ever I get additional data or info that bears on some policy, I'm going to update. I'm going to evolve. I don't need to be right. I want to find the truth, whatever that means or wherever that takes us. So that's the point of invoking and exerting the counselor within. Go ahead.
I think there is another point to add to this. The school and the church must take a particular line on things. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. But, you know, Doug has his opinions, I have my opinions, and we have our suspicions and our hypotheses mm-hmm. and theories, and we discuss these lots. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the school, you know, and representing the school and representing the church, there's a sensibility and liabilities mm-hmm. also that must be adhered to. So just because, hey, Doug, I got a great idea, let's throw it on the church site, that's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, it's going to be analyzed, criticized, and, you know, every other eyes imaginable before, you know, because it's got to be a neutral zone and a sensible zone when it comes to
grounded.
The school and the church. Yeah.
And what we talk about on the program, what we put on the websites, what we teach in the curriculum is, you know, essentially the official voice of MCHS. And so we're very careful in how we put things. And you're going to see that tonight and a little bit later on when we talk about euthanasia. So we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we appreciate everybody who's with us tonight live. And those who are joining us in the archives, we're going to do a few metaphysical news stories, and we're going to talk about euthanasia, and then we're going to talk a little bit briefly about our conference coming up next May in 2014. So, Vicki, what do you got for our first news story?
Well, you know, we're going to cover a bit of the gamut here, Doug, and a couple of things can have discussion. But first thing that I'd like to get out of the way, because there's a lot of people more and more all the time talking about UFO sightings or odd things in the sky. But I'll have you know, this was just put out not too long ago. Russia meteor shockwave circled the globe twice. So, you know, here's the deal. It's like there was a big meteor, and then these bits of, you know, meteor kind of flew around the Earth a couple of times in a little orbit. And so when people are looking in the sky, they have to be sensible about that. The other thing is a drone just crashed in Florida. Matter of fact, I think it was this morning.
Tampa.
And, you know, so there's been other drone crashes. So, you know, Doug and I had a discussion not too long ago about sightings that are recorded or crop circles that are recorded, you know, decades ago without all this technology and so on, have, I think, some further credibility than, you know, a lot of things that people claim they see now. So just for everybody off the top of the news, and I can cancel that one out because, you know, it's just a thing to, you know, address. And again, because we like to be sensible here, you know, hey, Doug is the first one. If I send Doug a picture, I say, wow, there's orbs, or I think there's a spirit in here. Oh, man, he's so analytical, it drives me crazy. and I get so disappointed. Oh, come on, please, can't it just be a little people?
Can it be a ghost, please?
So again, we, you know, just want to exercise those sensibilities before we start saying, wow, there's, and maybe there are more, and I'm with people. I tend to believe that there are more UFO sightings, more crop circles, perhaps. However, you know, I got to sit in the fence because I think they've been there a long time. So there we
go.
Well,
let's pick up on that just to make a brief comment. And since you brought it up, that's something for all our listeners to understand, and especially our students. That it was kind of goes back to what I was saying a few minutes ago. You know, if you're going to believe in something, fine. Make sure you can defend it to a reasonable degree. Now, with a lot of this stuff in metaphysics, we can't defend it with definitive proof like some other things like in physics. But we can defend it to a reasonable degree. For example, belief in life after death. I mean, it took me a while before I could reasonably or feel good about defending that, and I can, so I believe in it. Because I can defend it. There's just too much. Same with UFOs and spirits and so forth. So if you're going to believe in something, if you're going to put it out there, be able to defend it. That means that you have deliberately thought about it, reasoned on it, used critical thinking skills with it, and you're not just blindly accepting it because it's in vogue or the popular belief. And that's all I have to say on that.
There you go. Okay. Let's talk about a story that we had a discussion about yesterday, Doug. The man with no memory. Navy vet wakes up and speaks only Swedish. Now, this is a fascinating story. It's on CNN yesterday, so that would have been the 16th. And here's this guy, and you have to read the whole story, folks, if you're interested, but here's this guy who has all the ID of a fellow named Michael Thomas Boatwright, who's apparently, you know, from Florida. And his picture looks just like that. You know, who's lived a particular life, you know, moved around, had a family, all that stuff. Well, one day they find him and he woke up and he can only speak Swedish. So, you know, they put it out there in the net. Who is this guy? Anybody know him? And of course, all these folks in Sweden say, hey, we know him. He lives over here. He's done this. He's done that. And so, wow, you know, like this is pretty wild. There are stories of walk-ins. There are stories of amnesia and certain kinds of amnesia. And they have a term for what they believe that he may have, of course, psychological terms. But this, to me, is
Fugues.
One of... Sorry?
Fugue state.
F- fugue steak. Well, you can describe that to our listeners, Doug, exactly what fugue steak is, because you're better at it than I am.
I don't know what it means.
Oh.
I'm just
okay.
But you want to finish your, what you're saying? You want me?
Sure. Well, no, I mean, I think it's just fascinating how many different ways we can view this story. I've been hearing most of my life about walk-ins, meaning how one soul can leave a body and another one leaps in. Now, you know, I think that would be an anomalous kind of experience. I don't say it doesn't happen. I think that it's possible. Probably no more than a, you know, a soul enters the body of an infant and is born. Perhaps there's some kind of higher agreement that, you know, somebody says, okay, I'm done here, but my body's still quite healthy. Does anybody want it? I guess, you know, and somebody else says, yeah, I'll take it. I don't know about that. It's all that stuff we can just talk about and theorize. However, there's this other fascinating thing to this story is that they look the same. Now, there's another theory about twins, that each of us has a twin on the planet. And I apparently have one, and she's a party girl. She got me in a lot of trouble, that one.
That's a great excuse. I like that.
But I'm serious.
It wasn't me. It was my doppelganger.
That's right. You know, Doug, I met this girl. It was probably about 25 years ago. And I was quite shocked at looking across the table. She was only an inch shorter than me. But our features, we would pass absolutely as twins. It's very strange to meet a twin. So this story, I can't wait to hopefully do some follow-up on this fellow to, like, who is he? He's got one face, and he used to be this guy who spoke only English and Chinese or whatever because he spent time in China. But now he doesn't know English, and he can only speak Swedish. Now, how does that happen?
Yeah, there's the fugue state is basically amnesia. It's rare, and it's reversible usually. Often can last a few hours, days, or it can last a few months. But, you know, we were talking about this yesterday, and some of my thoughts on it is that it's entirely possible and probable, considering Occam's razor, the simplest explanation is likely the correct one. And that is that, you know, there was some traumatic event, some trauma, and when you can't remember something, we go into amnesia, it's the mind's way of protecting itself. So, you know, perhaps this, I don't know all these details, but so I'm speculating. Perhaps his parents were Swedish, and so he heard the language growing up, and he can recall it now in this fugue state. Perhaps he knew Swedish, and so his mind is completely blocking him from English and so forth. So those are some answers, some possibilities. It's an interesting case, and it's very rare.
Well, I find it totally fascinating, and I'd like to hopefully be able to do some follow-up on that story. We're going to move along, Doug, and talk about ancient Egyptian statue. Starts moving by itself.
Yeah, some links in the chat room.
Yeah, I can do that.
You know, now for those who are listening to the archive, you'll have to do a search. So we'll give you the words.
Well, there's this Manchester Museum in the United Kingdom has this Egyptian statue that's been there apparently for, you know, quite a while. It dates back to 1800 BC. And then one day it just started moving on its own. It apparently only moves at night, and it only does a 180-degree turn, which means now that its back is to the people. And so, you know, they make kind of fun of that in the article. But, you know, it's nobody can really figure it out. However, Doug and I have talked to, there could be underground, you know, work going on in the area. They could be working on roads a few miles away. There's vibrations in the earth, any number of things. But it's only that one statue.
It actually only moves during the day. At night, it's still.
It's
just flip flop from what you said. But, you know, if you watch the video, it's cool. You know, you get all these people walking through, And, of course, it makes sense that whatever vibrations in the floor and ground are having this effect, and even if it hadn't moved before, it doesn't mean it can't, and it doesn't mean that its center of gravity doesn't make it just spin. But it's cool. It's interesting.
It is interesting. I mean, it's one of those fun things, and what does it mean? Maybe nothing. But, you know, it's maybe something. It's just one of those things that makes your eyebrows go up and say, wow. But while we're talking about mummies, this is the story, to me, of the night. And I've come across it, and I've really...
This next story.
Yeah, this next story. It's really excited me. You know, back in 1992, I believe, this Dr. Bala Benova, she's a forensic medical doctor, researcher. She wrote an article to state that she had found traces of nicotine and cocaine in mummies that went back, you know, a few thousand years. And she was basically trashed, Doug. I mean, everybody was, she was made of, you know, they ridiculed her, they mocked her. And apparently she even had death threats from the scientific community. Yeah, it's really
bizarre. Talking about closed-minded. Well, but our listeners may not appreciate the significance of what you're saying. Okay, so what? She found nicotine and cocaine evidence. So what? What does that mean?
Well, it means that, you know, modern history would say that tobacco was brought over by Sir Walter Raleigh during the Victorian era, and that's the first it was ever heard of in Europe, because that was after Columbus. Don't you know? You know, Columbus was the first guy to go across the road. You know, we know that's not true. There's evidence of the Vikings on the East Coast, especially up, you know, around the upper part of North America and so on. We know that Columbus was not the first to travel over the waters. But this is all the European history, the Christianized versions. It all kind of balances together, don't you know, about creationism and so on, and how we've evolved. So that's really important to note, because now Dr. Bala Benova comes along and says, no, you're wrong. And she's stuck to her guns, and she has done all this research that, in fact, she tested mummies that dated from 3700 BC to 1100 BC, before Christ, everybody. It's really significant. And she studied mummies all the way from Egypt over into China. Now, the only place on this planet that tobacco leaves grow is in South America. So that's really important to know. We were traveling the planet, doing trade back and forth all over this globe long before, you know, the birth of this alleged Christ, and before Columbus ever, you know, landed his little button boats on the shores. And so it's rewriting history. So this is what's so significant about this. And this rewrite of history just, you know, and slowly people in the science community are starting to warm up to this, and they're starting to, you know, religious people are starting to warm up to this idea, but it's very difficult for people to change their belief systems. Yes, the people in all these different countries were doing cocaine, everybody. They were doing drugs, and they were smoking tobacco and doing all their stuff. So I think it's a fantastic story. If anybody's interested in watching a documentary, all you have to do is Cocaine Mummies of Ancient Egypt into YouTube. And there's varying lengths of the documentary that you can watch, but it's really a fascinating story, Doug, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, I watched a documentary that talked about the Knights Templar coming over in the 1300s, you know, to North America. So, yeah, it's just, Columbus has paved the way to...
Well, that was the rights of discovery. You know, you had the Spanish, the French, and the English saying, okay, whoever gets wherever first gets to put their flag in, and we get all the resources. So this was that takeover, so to speak, and an agreement between three governments. you know, we're under the rule of kings and queens. And but like you say, the Knights Templar being way before that, but now we have to go back 5,000 years. 5,000 years of boats that can travel the distance of oceans.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Polynesians were too. I mean, they made it to Easter Island. They went all around, you know, Polynesians.
Which is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's fantastic. And, you know, the more we learn about our sciences and, you know, we can all speculate. Like I can say, you know, I feel really strongly that we've been doing this for thousands of years, but there's no evidence. And now that they start to come up with evidence and stronger evidence, they're finding Egyptian artifacts now, and they're just starting to in South America. Mm. So there were these trades. So all over the world, they're finding artifacts from other civilizations in different areas.
Well, there's also the pyramid connection, too, because there's pyramids in Mexico and Egypt, you know, and other places around the world. So,
and there's pyramids here in North America. And if you go up, there's claims of them. Now, I can tell you now, my Red Nations friends have absolutely believe in very many places throughout the Rocky Mountains, there are pyramids under the ground. Now, there isn't any science to back that up because nobody really cares yet.
Right.
You know? So this is fantastic in understanding who we are as a species, how we have evolved, how we can, you know, have a wider view of ourselves and you know, the journey that we've taken over, you know, what we know is likely 50,000 years. And, you know, take out some of these notions of that, you know, that religion has held us back from, Doug. Really,
mm-hmm.
it holds us back. It holds back our thinking,
Amen.
Our minds. And if we can just exclude that kind of thinking for a minute and look at a greater story, you know, I think we have far more possibilities to become, you know, even more evolved and hopefully get you know, work past this dark side to nature, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So what's on the next story?
Well, these are basically my main stories of the night, and unless you want to, of course, talk about, there's this...
the Starbeat, the vortexes.
Yeah, and maybe we'll leave that for another time. There's in ancient-code.com, NASA discovers hidden portals in Earth's magnetic field. You can do a little research on that. We're going to do a little more ourselves, and maybe next month we'll come back and be able to talk about that more. But there is a way now that apparently NASA is discovering how we can tap into portals, literally in space. And if you can do it in space, you can do it on Earth. So, you know, we've been talking about portals for a long time. I believe in portals. The Saturn energy portals, you know, these energy spots that go into the ground. And anyway, it's exciting. And if they're now developing the science that goes with that, the Stargate possibilities open wide.
And this particular article is talking about magnetic anomalies that are allow a direct link from the Earth to the sun. So, you know, and it's just magnetic anomalies that are holes, vortexes.
So it's any number of things are possible from that one. You know, that's about all I got for you tonight, Doug. And
go ahead.
Hope people learn something from them and continue to investigate. The reason I like to bring these stories forward is it makes people think. So.
Yep, and there's a lot of stuff going on. Well, let's switch or segue into a topic that I wanted to talk about tonight, euthanasia. I had received an email from a MCHS member asking about our policy on euthanasia. Well, we really never had a policy on euthanasia, but after answering his questions and discussing the issue, we now have a policy on euthanasia, which I'll mention in a moment. Obviously, euthanasia is got a bunch of different names. Mercy killing, assisted suicide, there's a couple that come to mind. But euthanasia is essentially mercy killing. And what we're talking about within this context is euthanasia with humans, and it's more in the area of voluntary euthanasia. In other words, a person has an illness, a disease, and they're going through insufferable pain and misery. And so euthanasia would mean they off themselves. They commit suicide, but I hate to use the word suicide because it's not an emotional thing. It's a very deliberate decision to end pain and suffering. And so voluntary euthanasia. So, you know, what is that? Is that wrong? Is it immoral? You know, what do the state say? What do the law say about it? And so forth. Well, interestingly, there's a handful of states and counties and even countries where it's legal in a sense. There's an active form of euthanasia and there's a passive form. For example, passive form is if you need to take medications to keep you kicking and you stop taking those medications and you die from it, well, that's more of a passive form of voluntary euthanasia. An active form of it would be assisted suicide, where you actually do something to end your life. So there's different laws about it. So how can we glean the proper answer, a healthy answer? Well, one way is to go back to MCHS Church's 9 principles of belief. For example, principle number 1 talks about do no harm and do right. And these principles absolutely bear on this matter and obviously would preclude an individual from deciding if another person should be euthanized. So it's not up to an individual to decide if another individual should be euthanized. It's a personal decision. It's an individual decision. Even if that other person is going through chronic pain, you know, we don't have the right to choose who lives and who dies. So, and if we did, of course, we would be violating respect for free will, which principle number 7 talks about. But principle number 7 also sheds some light on the case of an individual with a terminal illness who chooses to euthanize themselves. And because of respect for free will, that person would have that right to make that decision. It's free will. You know, a person has the right to choose whether, you know, their end of life or their right to life decisions, make those choices. You know, free will is a cosmic truth. It applies to the universe in a universal context. And so it's important to recognize that in some cases, euthanizing oneself or assisting another to do so with consent may not violate the principles of do no harm and do right. It all depends on the circumstances. One of the things we have to remember that sometimes folks get so involved in doing no harm and doing right for others that they forget to do right for themselves too. And so this is a purely individual decision. It's a delicate and sensitive issue that they would have to make themselves in the light of do no harm and do right. And nobody can really judge them for that. So
basically, MCHS has no pro or anti stand on this because it's none of our business.
Well, in a sense, but we support. In fact, let me just read you our policy on euthanasia. It's short. We do not support suicide or murder, but we do support an individual's informed and moral right to decide his or her own end-of-life issues in the spirit of do no harm and do right. In some cases, voluntary euthanasia is consistent with these principles. That's our policy.
And, you know, this is a huge discussion. What I like to remind people of, Doug, is that we take a lot of medicine and we do a lot of things to keep ourselves alive. Here's the deal. I always call it bought time or rented time, actually, because you know, somebody has a medical treatment that literally saves their life when they would otherwise have been deceased.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people kept alive on medications, and I am one. You know, without a certain medical treatment regularly, my body shuts down and I die. So having said that, we go to great lengths to stay alive. But when it is our time, there, I think, truly, and I say this with all my heart, there's an acceptance that all things must transit. And I don't say die because I don't believe it's death. It's just a transformation. I think what's really hard is the emotional loss on this side when people leave us.
Mm-hmm.
So keep in mind that we do invest a lot into living longer and sometimes beyond our time. And who deems that? You know, we're living in that kind of an era now that you can get a new heart, you can get new kidneys, you can get new livers, you just go get new parts, you know? And, you know, we're growing limbs now, which is fascinating. But when it is the time, we don't want to let go. And so this is every individual's right to make that decision to say, okay, I'm done here.
And we want to stress, we're not talking about suicide where, you know, people get distraught, they want a way out, that kind of thing. That's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about, especially with terminal illness, when there's lots of pain and life is no longer meaningful, there's no quality of life left, and that's a decision for them to make. We're not giving anybody permission here to go off yourself. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about higher principles at work here, respect for free will, the individual's right to make choices for themselves and no one else, and the idea of doing no harm and doing right, because sometimes those would apply in this case. So anyway.
Well, you know, and what I will say, though, when you are dealing, anyone is come in contact with somebody who is contemplating suicide, there are a number of things that you should keep in mind. Is seek help, seek professional help. Don't, you know, keep that to yourself. It has to go outside of yourself so that you're not alone with somebody's threatened suicide. I believe absolutely that it's not a secret, you know, so that you bear that burden. And that you continue to talk with people until they get through it. You know, Lori just wrote in the chat, she said, you know, suicide's a permanent solution to a very temporary problem. And particularly in emotions and depression and people going through bad times, it, you know, sometimes pain feels so big that we think it's just going to be forever and you want out. That is different than what we're talking about with regard to euthanasia. So I think we've all come across somebody who has considered, I'm out of here, I'm going to kill myself and blah, blah. And I have my way of dealing with people, but here's the thing. Don't just leave it with yourself so that you bear that responsibility. Talk to somebody else, get professional help, get somebody else involved. And usually when somebody says, I want to kill myself, it is their way of reaching out for help. So get help. So.
Well put. All right, so good discussion. Let's talk about a couple of announcements, or one in particular. We've completed all of the development and scheduling of our first annual metaphysics conference and graduation ceremony. It's scheduled for May 2nd and 3rd. 2014, this coming May next year, and there is a graphic on the website at mchschurch.org and a page of a lot of information. It's going to be held at the Hilton Garden Inn near the airport in Sarasota, Florida. We're going to do a Friday night meet and greet event. Now, this conference is primarily aimed at MCHS members, invited guests, and, of course, IMHS students and graduating students. So Friday night, we're going to do a meet and greet starting at about 6 p.m. Friday night on May 2nd. It'll go to about 11. We're going to have a dinner that's included in the registration fee. And one of my friends, Reverend Gregory Kent, is going to be doing a table tipping demonstration. And if you've never seen one or been a part of one, they're fascinating. And they're just fun and they're cool. They're just fascinating from a metaphysical point of view.
Now, so, Reverend Gregory is a medium, is mm-hmm, he not, in spiritualist?
Mm-hmm. Spiritualist
yeah.
medium. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, excuse me, he will be doing that. And then, so that's Friday night. And then Saturday during the day, we're going to have our conference. And again, this conference is aimed at MCHS members and IMHS students. And, of course, invited guests or non-graduating students, doesn't matter, but it's aimed at our organization. I don't have it yet opened up to the public. If we still have space available come next March or so, then we will open it up to the public. But I'm hoping we don't have to. I would love to meet students and MCHS members. And so, you know, if you're looking to get away for a couple of days, you can. And don't forget that Orlando's only a couple hours away from here with the theme parks, Disney World, and so forth. So you can perhaps even work it into an extended vacation. But Saturday we'll have about 10 different presentations, presenters, and of course Dr. Vicky and myself will be doing some of those presentations. Lunch is included, there's continental breakfast included, morning snacks, afternoon snacks are included in the conference day time. And then Saturday evening we're going to have our graduation ceremony and banquet. So dinner is included in that. We'll have a speech by yours truly, and then we will go through the graduation ceremony. And if you are an IMHS student and have earned your bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, you can graduate. Whatever highest degree you have is the one you'll graduate with. And of course, if you are graduating with your bachelor's or your master's degree, you can come back the following year and graduate with your doctoral degree if you wish. It's Once you graduate your doctoral degree, you're kind of done, but we hope you keep coming back. We're going to start having them really the first weekend in May each year. So this will be the first one. And that night, Saturday night with the graduation ceremony, students who are graduating, their cap, gown, and stole is included in the registration fee, and the dinner is included. We're going to be giving out some honors awards and some different things. There'll be an opportunity for graduating students to have a little short speech if they'd like to do that. And we even have a couple of students who are talented who might, you know, do what they do, play a song or a magic show or something like that. And we'll have an opportunity to just visit and get to know each other better. And there will be a cash bar available too. Both nights, as a matter of fact. So,
and it's just going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and getting together and meeting people. I mean, I hope all my students will come. I'd like to meet all of them, face to face. That'd be great. If you would like to register, there's a several combinations. You can, graduating students, they register and they get all of it included. But if you're not graduating, you know, you can come to the Friday and Saturday night only parts. You can come to the Saturday daytime conference part only. Or you can come to just the Saturday night graduation. So graduating students who may have loved ones or family members that come along and they just maybe want to go to the graduation, they can do that. More details is on the website. In fact, the quick link to that information on MCHS Church, and I'm going to give it to you, I believe it's conference.mchschurch.org.
I think you're right.
It's close. It's 2014 conference.mchschurch.org. So you can find out all the details here. We'll put it in the chat room. Anyway, we're out of time, folks. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week. Good night.
See you next week.